This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Yesterday, we talked with Michigan radio listener John Stempien, who shared his experiences as an adult adoptee in Michigan, especially his frustration at not being able to access his own birth records, his birth parents' medical history, all because he was adopted in Michigan before 1980.
Having my son and daughter for the first time in my life, I was able to look at another person and see them reflected in that face.
Your face reflected in
this. It was huge. And that's another moment. And I never realized how much I had been walking through life without experience. And most folks can take that day to day and take it for granted. It was just wonderful. But then, you know, as a father, well, I feel my children are due this heritage.
We wanted to take a closer look at how Michigan's adoption law has progressed through the years and why it is so many adult adoptees have to go through a third party, a confidential intermediary, in any hope of finding a birth parent or learning more about their background. And a reminder, just in case you missed yesterday's program, I am an adult adoptee. I was adopted at 7 weeks in January 1954. Go ahead, you can do the math. And in June of 2007, with the help of a confidential intermediary, I was reunited with my birth mother. Tina Caudill is with us now. Tina is a birth mom who is reunited with her child. She is a confidential intermediary, and she's the Michigan representative for the American Adoption Congress. Good to have you with us, Tina.
Hi, Cindy. Glad to be here.
And we welcome Daryl Royal. He is a reunited adoptee. He found his birth mother and birth father, and he is a confidential intermediary in Wayne County. He can crack open those sealed records and help adoptees and birth parents reunite. And he's an advocate for open records. Welcome, Daryl.
Thank you.
John Stempien wrote to us. He wanted to share a story and explain what it's like to not know your own medical history, not see a face that echoes your own, not know your ethnic heritage. I'm wondering, Daryl, how does John's story compare to first what you experienced as an adult adoptee and then what you hear in your work as a CI?
Oh, it was a very common tale to my own. I mean, I remember the first time I met my birth father. You know, I had never had any kids, so at 40 years old, here I was faced with the first birth relative I had ever been in the presence of in my entire life, and it was huge. Every time he'd look the other way, I'd study his face to see if, you know, I could pick out similarities. It was amazing. So I really related to that. But I also related to the frustration because I had a confidential intermediary myself at one point. And after 7 months, the only information I got, sadly, was that they wrote some letters to some people. That was not very satisfying
to
me.
No, that's certainly not.
That's why I finally picked up my own search, did it myself, and learned how to do this.
And now you work with people who want to try to make that same connection that you made.
That's right.
Tina, when did you reunite with your child?
Basically some efforts on my part that had been going along for a few years and the coming together of some information I needed. I wrote directly to the parents and didn't hear back for a while. So then I did a second letter to my child about maybe 3 to 6 months later and got a reply from them. And that was the beginning of what's been a 25-year relationship now.
I'm wondering what kinds of questions you were asking yourself in those years before the reunion. We heard from John Stempien about the things he was wondering as an adoptee, and Daryl and I both had those same questions. What were you asking yourself as the birth parent?
As a birth parent, I feel like about the first 4 years of my life, I was sort of just in a limbo because there's no way to process the grief. Nobody knows about the event. You have to go on living your life as if you're still a single person. And then every time you go to a baby shower or people ask you, and how many kids do you have? You know, you feel like if you tell a lie, you're stabbing yourself in the heart. So I thought after about the first 4 years, you know, nothing stays the same forever. So I went back to the agency and found out I could request some non-identifying information on the adopted family. So getting that at least was some sense of comfort to get an idea sort of what their family was like, although being in Michigan, it was very generic because, you know, the dad worked for an auto company, his mom was a secretary, and, you know, how many families do we have like that here in Michigan?
Sure.
Back in that time period. So like I said, it was very generic. But at least it gave me some sense of peace. But again, for the first 23 years of their life, I didn't know if they were dead or alive. And it's actually just not knowing that that made me think, you know, there's other people out there like me that have to be going through the same thing that made me start Adoption Identity Movement way back in the early 70s.
When you look at the evolution of Michigan's adoption law and how it is that people like us are asking these kinds of questions, and the fact that because you were adopted before 1980, as was I, Daryl, you were not free to just go and access the records on your existence. It seems to me that 2 years are especially significant, apart from 1861, which saw the first Michigan law regarding adoption. Tina, what happened in 1945?
Well, the adoptions in general had been open, you know, prior to that. But both the way because society was and people were thinking that perhaps children had to be protected from the outside public. So that's not the immediate families, but the public in general, from maybe asking too many inquiring questions, things of that nature. So it sort of was a domino effect. The states, one after another, started sealing their records. But there was never any, like, follow-up done once the records were sealed to say, okay, is this new procedure working? There was no input from birth parents as to the sealing of the records or making that process happen. And then plus the mental health practitioners at the time, that was sort of a new thing coming on the scene, and they sort of felt that birth moms or unwed parents, that they had various mental health issues, so that we were sort of damaged goods, damaged people. So we definitely, you know, didn't have good parenting skills and couldn't raise our own children. And then also there was a lot of religious input because of the very strong values back then and the thoughts of people that the general public had about unwed mothers, that, you know, most of them were probably prostitutes and the unwed fathers were just gad-about-town types of guys and, you know, didn't have any sense of responsibility. However, over the years, this has been examined by people who are in the adoption reform movement, and they are finding that nobody ever asked for confidentiality. This was something that was imposed on us by the system in place back then and still continues to this day. There's actually been research done to check on all the legal rights termination papers in all the 50 states, and not in one state is the word confidential listed in the paperwork. And I've been doing this for 40 years, and I've never once ran into a birth parent who requested confidentiality. It's just something that was imposed.
I would suspect there are adoptive parents who are interested in not going down that path, correct?
That could be, and a lot of it back then, it was just lack of education to all the parties concerned, because back then, adoption was thought of as a one-time event. It was not thought of a lifelong journey, which now, you know, people more fully understand for all the parties involved.
Yeah, I can attest to adoptive parents having problems with it from personal experience.
Yeah, see, I know in my case, when I did my search, both of my parents had passed away. So it seemed like the deck was clear, and I think I dithered so many years for that very, very reason.
That's very common.
Daryl, in 1980, what happened?
They just finally reexamined the issue, and they decided that it was time to open things up. But unfortunately, they only did it prospectively and left everybody like you and I hanging in the balance.
So what actually did they do? What were the steps that happened?
Now, when somebody's relinquished for adoption, the birth parents are given the option of signing a paper saying they don't want contact. But if they don't sign that paper, it's assumed that they do, and the records are open to the adoptees.
So here's what we've got then. I was adopted before September 1980, and if my birth parent has filed a consent to be contacted form, I can get identifying information. But if no consent form is filed, tough luck. And if I was adopted after September 1980, I can get that information as long as my birth parent hasn't filed a denial form. Tina, why are things so different for people adopted after September 1980? Why did they not open it up for everyone?
Well, it was a struggle trying to make some changes back then, and I guess they thought, the legislative body anyway, that they would do this in increments or baby steps to see how it worked. Unfortunately, it has not been widely publicized by them. I get calls, you know, every other day, it seems, from people that, oh, this happened in 1980 or this happened in 1995, all these new procedures, you know, how come I didn't hear about this before? So that's another thing that gets into it. And unfortunately, in Michigan, we have like a two-step system, I guess you might call it, because we still have totally closed and we have semi-open. We have fully open adoptions going on. And it's a system that I guess they think adopted people remain children all their lives and that they never grow up and have the wherewithal among themselves. They can raise their families, they can go fight in the services, they can be CEOs of companies, but as far as the state is concerned, they are still young children that do not have the capacity to make their own decisions about the relationships in their lives. And unfortunately, it impacts not only them, but now that they're older and they're married, it impacts their own children and even their grandchildren in some cases, depending, you know, how far back you're talking. And also, a lot of the birth parents are now dying off, so they're going to end up finding a grave at the end of the search, and that's very sad.
Yeah, the thing about being treated as a child, I testified at hearings before the legislature when we tried to get things opened up a little more back, I think it was in 2010. And it was person after person on the panel, the legislators who talked about the adopted child this and adopted children that. And I finally, when I got up there, I said, well, I'd like to start by pointing out that I am not an adopted child. I am in my 50s. I am perfectly capable of managing my own affairs and my own relationships with other adults, and I don't need somebody else to tell me how to do it.
What was the reaction?
They seemed to listen, but in the end, they fell back on what has always been the problem in the legislative efforts I've been involved in, and that's that they somehow have it in their head that we made promises to birth mothers that they would get privacy. And this is despite the fact that we had a whole run of birth mothers who testified, one, they didn't get promised privacy, and more importantly, two, they didn't want it. There was not one birth mother who testified to the contrary. Instead, they sent in adoptive fathers on behalf of the birth mothers of their adopted children to testify that they were protecting the birth mothers. It was insane. What drives me really crazy is they're protecting people from each other who don't want that. I mean, I do this work as a confidential intermediary, and I think my rates are 80 to 85% of the birth mothers I contact want contact. And yet they've built this huge bureaucratic wall that protects people who don't need the protection and don't want it.
And you must see that, too, in your work as a CI, Tina.
Right, yeah, that's pretty much the same statistics I had for the cases I've done over the years. It's very sad when you think of all the loss that's going to be involved of what not knowing their heritage, not knowing their medical background is going to do for, you know, the adult adoptees and their current families.
Yeah, people seem to think that adoptees only search because they're curious. You know, they just want to know.
Like scratching an itch.
Yeah, they don't need to know. They just want to know. They're just curious. But it's so much more than that. I mean, from my own reunion, I feel so much more a part of this world. I mean, I sat out there in an adoptive family that I love, don't get me wrong. But I didn't look like anybody. My personality was different. We all looked different from each other and from our parents. And sometimes it felt like I was dropped in by space aliens or something.
The other thing that I know drove my search was every time you'd go to the doctor and get asked for medical history, you had a big zero. And when you realize how many conditions that can happen that are genetic and familial, you really do want to know what that is that you're carrying in you.
Yeah.
And on top of that, they have the Surgeon General of the United States for many years now has been telling all of us we need a three-generation medical history. So, okay, that'd be nice if we could get it, you know.
If you've just joined us, we're talking about the condition of Michigan's adoption law, what it means to be an adult adoptee in our state. As we talk with Daryl Royal, who is an adult adoptee who found both birth parents, and Tina Caudill is a birth mom who reunited with her child, and both are confidential intermediaries who help reunite birth parents and adult adoptees, and both work very, very hard to reform and open up the records for Michigan adoptees. What would it take, you guys, to launch another push to ease the restrictions? Tina?
One thing it took is we needed to have a little change in the legislature because, as Daryl was indicating, the most recent effort we did get a bill passed through the House, I believe it was, something like 99-0, but then it never would be brought up by the senator of the Children and Family Committee before the end of the legislative session. And plus, it was also during a time when the whole country was going through, you know, the recession and everything, and the state was just involved in a lot more issues trying to keep the financial house afloat and other companies going and things of that nature. So we're hoping that maybe now things have settled down a little bit and we can look over the horizon, I guess you might see what the current makeup is of the various committees and hopefully reach out and do a little investigation and find a sponsor to get this topic resurrected again.
I think there's still a lot of paternalism going on, too. I mean, even the bills that we passed, every one of them, we got it to the point where it was something we could buy, and then somebody threw in, but your first contact has to be through a confidential intermediary. In their minds, in a lot of their minds, they already have that, and that gives us the means. Unfortunately, that's not a perfect solution. I know I was a little insulted that they charged me $250 to have somebody else call my mommy for me.
Right, and everybody else gets their original birth certificate for, yeah, I think, $26 now, I believe. You just go in and do it. And unfortunately, that's the same way it is all around the country. We only have about 8 or 10 states that actually have access to original birth certificates, and it's been a long struggle for a lot of them. Tennessee struggled about 20 years. New Jersey, that just recently opened, it's the same type of thing. Long, long time to bring these things to fruition, but people keep trying.
In fact, I wondered how Michigan compares to other states. Are there some states that are considerably more ahead of the game than we are? Yeah. You rolled your eyes. Daryl, yeah, if that wasn't throwing shade, I don't know what was.
Yeah, some states are completely open. There's no, mm-hmm, restrictions.
Or there never has been.
Yeah, yeah, some there never were closed in the first place. That's right.
And yeah, some Kansas never was, yeah.
And some they have to, the birth parents still have the right to veto the release of the original birth certificate. So there's a range of things, but there's a growing number of states that have opened things up far more than we have here in Michigan.
Do either of you expect to see a day when things will be totally open in Michigan?
I sure hope so. I sure hope it's soon, to tell you the truth. But, you know, we shall see. We can only do it a day at a time and step at a time. But it does get very frustrating, and Daryl and I have talked about this many a times over the years.
I think it's a tough go. I think they just are entrenched in the attitude that we're going to beat down the doors of our birth parents and ruin their lives. What kills me is they looked at the statistics last time we had hearings, and the system where you could file a denial has been in place since 1980, and over that time they had about 200 denials of all the adoptions in this state in over 20 years. 200, and yet that is enough reason to hold off the thousands and thousands of the rest of us. Like I was saying, it's not curiosity. To me, I feel so much more comfortable in my own skin. I mean, I like to say that a piece of me I didn't even realize was missing has come back. I mean, I never would have been able to even do something like this interview before. I just have so much more comfort and self-confidence because I know who I am now.
Tina Caudill and Daryl Royal, I really thank both of you for sharing your experiences, and I know we're probably going to get conversations provoked as people think about what that means, no matter where they are on that birth triad. And I hope we've got some people thinking, and we'll see what kind of things might come from that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Cindy.
Yes, thanks
Appreciate
for having
it.
Us.